Welcome to You Can Plume, the business podcast where we talk about holistic health as a female entrepreneur. We get to the heart of what it means to live well-being and success in a feminine way so that you can plume in and with your business. If you don't know me yet, I'm Stephanie, a business mentor, yoga teacher, and cultural anthropologist from Germany. Grab your favorite drink, something to write, and let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome to the podcast, You Can Plume, today with a special guest, Adrienne. You're now the second time on one of my podcasts. The first time was with Yoga auf Deutsch, my mindfulness and yoga podcast, mainly in German. But today, for my English business podcast, You Can Plume, and I would love to tell the audience who you are by reading out loud your wonderful biography. Adrienne is an author, mindfulness activist, yoga teacher and coach, multi-award-winning blogger, passionate US overseas voter advocate, and podcaster. She is known for supporting and empowering women and experts through her online communities and leadership roles with international women's clubs and other global organizations. I'm so honored that you are here on my podcast again. Thank you very, very much for coming back.
Dankeschön, Stephanie. I just love being here. I love the name of your podcast. I
Thank
just love it.
you.
You continue to inspire, and I appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. And we have a lot in common. We all already know that. But I think we should focus on the most recent things. And I think the most recent thing is our cooperation for the International Women's Day this year. And you will host a summit, and you asked me if I want to be a part of it. So I am so thrilled to be a part of it. Would you like to tell us a bit more about the summit?
I am equally thrilled that you agreed because I don't even like summits, but I don't even like summits, but I knew that this year in 2025 that I wanted to be very deliberate about the circle of women around me in business life and in private life. And sometimes those sections overlap. Right. So it, with business life, I said, I want to do something. I want to do something with some women that inspire me. You, and I deliberately picked you. I picked another woman. I won't, don't want to give it away because people are going to come to the summit. Another woman that I worked with. Actually, I'd worked with all three of you. And all three of you are fantastic in your own right in different countries, doing different but similar things, and have contributed to my well-being in our cooperations that we've had in the past. So I thought, okay, I want to do something. Let's do something. And then we got in a group and we talked and we decided that it would be a summit. I wasn't really sure what it would be. And then I thought, okay, why not International Women's Day? And that's what we're doing. It's March 8th, but because it's four of us, we each get a day. So we start on March 5th. Do you remember which day you have?
I am the opening,
You kick it
the
off.
opening
There you go.
act.
You're the opening act, you kick it off for us. And then we all get to be together in the end for a panel discussion. So we're in the final scheduling of that because everyone is so busy. We're in the final scheduling of that because full disclosure, it will be pre-recorded because as I say, we're on th four different countries, two different continents, and we want it to be accessible to women on, is it five or six continents? Including Antarctica, I think it's six continents. We want
Yeah,
women
that's
on.
always the question. Like, is America
Yeah.
one? Is it North? Is it, I don't care. Beautiful people everywhere.
And we want them all to come, primarily women, but also our allies, because everyone should be, probably is, or could be celebrating International Women's Day. And we have a great alternative for you. So thank you for helping me make this a reality, because it was just something in my head. And I knew I wanted you to be a part of it.
Yeah, it wasn't even a question if I want to collaborate with you again. It was just a huge yes when you asked. And going back to the end of last year, we both published a book. And this was mine, a calendar which is written only for women, for female entrepreneurs. And you gave us all the honor to sponsor the month of December. So now I can't wait that it's December again. Can you believe it?
Trust me, the
But
time will go fast. The time goes
yes,
fast, Rosie.
absolutely. But this was my book, but you published a book too. So let's talk about your book, please.
Well, you know what, Stephanie, you may not know, but you inspired me because this was the book that
Thank
I
you.
had that I was working on that was going to do it. And then when you said, I'm doing a book, I thought, well, you know what, maybe this is my year to get mine out too.
And I got inspired by another beautiful woman, by Viola Duncan. So,
See?
yeah.
Oh my gosh. See, that's another reason to come to our International Women's Summit because it's going to be four women plus the panel. Who knows who we're going to inspire, right? So
Yes,
that's
exactly.
fantastic. Yeah. Because I do believe this, everybody has a book in them. Have you heard that expression in Germany?
I don't think we have it, but it makes so much sense.
So you can understand what I mean because we all have a story to tell. What
Yes,
kind of book it
yes.
would be, who knows, right? So I consider this actually my mother's book because my mother, PhD ethnomusicologist, she's always was on me, when are you going to write your book? When are you going to get your PhD? Now, in June of 2024, my mom took a turn in her health when we weren't sure how much longer. She was 94. She was born in 1930. She ended up dying on December 28th.
Yeah.
Horrible. We don't even have to get into that. Horrible, just because it's a loss for me, and I'm an adult orphan.
Yeah, I'm so
Wonderful that I was
sorry.
with her and she was home. Thank you. But I said, I've got to get this in her hands. So I was able to get it in her hands in November. So, long story short, to say this is a mindfulness book, contains different practices. It's not a yoga book, it's not a meditation book. It's everything. I consider it mindfulness book. And little did I know that when I, okay, it's 52 weeks, 52 prompts, it's 52 weeks in a year. Doesn't mean you have to start at the beginning of the year, but it's bite-sized in that it's not something you have to do every day. I don't want people to be intimidated before they even start to build their mindfulness practice because don't we always start with, I don't have enough time for this, or I don't have the money for this, or I don't, when it's something that we so desperately need to address. Right, our mindfulness, our well-being, our mental health and our physical health and our spiritual health, whatever form that takes. But little did I know that I would lose her at the end of the year, and then I'm cracking this open at the beginning of the year to help me get through on week eight. I think it's tapping. So I'm gonna be doing some tapping this week. And that's what it is. So the dedication is a love letter to my mother. The book is designed, as I say, to be accessible, but not to take yourself too seriously, too. And there may be some things in here that you don't like at all, but please try, read it, think about it, maybe come back. Who knows? I never thought for one I'd be into tapping. I can remember when a colleague asked me years ago, are you into EFT tap? Do you know what tapping is? And I was looking at her and she's like, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? I said, no. And she just kind of like walked away, like she knew I wasn't ready for it. So that could be, maybe this will be your first exposure to some mindfulness practice that you never thought isn't your thing. And I hope it'll encourage you to try it. And oh, yes, Stephanie, we've got a Facebook group if you're still on Facebook. And also in the introduction or somewhere in here, I have a link to anyone who wants to make an appointment so we can talk like you and I are talking. If you get stuck, if you need help, we can do at least start with a 15-minute conversation because I want it to be
Perfect.
accessible. Some
Yeah.
have links to practices because you can get a digital version as well. But Stephanie, you know, this book is full of things that we just, I don't want to say we take for granted, but once me and you figured out these things work, whether it's mindful eating, meditating, walking, you know, you're big on your exercise, getting rest. It's just all in here. It's just and hopefully with a little bit of sense of humor so that you'll do it. And I don't know about you, but I was just getting over my dad's death in 2021. So now we got mommy in the at the end of 2024. People are experiencing grief and loss continuously in different shapes and forms. We talked about this before. So that's why I think this book can always be timely and relevant, just like your calendar. Even though you have a calendar and maybe the dates change, all the information on each page in that calendar is timeless, right? It doesn't expire. So that's why you can pick this book up anytime. But I do encourage that you start week one, because you're going to start with sitting down and just, I say get a glass of wine or whatever your beverage is, and you're just going to spend that time with yourself thinking about how you want to feel for the next 52 weeks. Not like what you want to achieve or accomplish, but how do you want to feel over the next 52 weeks? So whenever you are and pick it up, how do you want to feel the next 52 weeks? Once you figure that out, give yourself a week to figure that out. If it's hard, it could be hard, or it could be like boom, right away. And then just dive into the practices. Thank you for letting me talk about it. It seems so weird to have written a book,
Yeah, isn't it? But
doesn't
it's
it?
so great. And your book is absolutely amazing. I think this is like the real yoga practice. And we also talked about this before. We don't need to label it. Like, it's not always, oh, I do yoga, I do this. It's just a beautiful mindfulness practice we all can do. And I will put a link below the show and below the
Oh,
video
thank
so
you.
everyone can have it with one click, of course.
Duncan, I appreciate that.
Yes, it's wonderful.
One thing I was going to say, and I'm so glad that you said that, it doesn't have to be labeled, because my husband and my Swede will not do yoga with me, right? I have sat through lectures with him that he's given and blah blah blah, but he won't do yoga with me. But he's got a very strong mindfulness practice in two ways. One way that I'm really need to work on for myself, he is a wonderful mindful eater. Wonderful, wonderful mindful eater. He can spend an hour at a meal.
Me too.
Can you? Oh my gosh, I'm done in like
Yeah.
15, 10 minutes, and that's my problem. That's what I have to work on. I am clearing the table and doing the dishes while people are still eating. I'm disturbing people, because I've eaten my meal and I'm going on. And I'm thinking, well, it's hot. I want it to be hot. I want that. Like, your food's not hot at the end of that hour, but somehow you're still enjoying your meal. Right? I'm like, I
Yes,
want my
that's
cold.
true. It's cooling down.
It's like, I want my hot food hot, my cold food cold. I want my food temperature appropriate, but I'm missing out on a lot of things. Like, he sits there, he looks at it, he makes sure he gets everything he wants on it, and then he looks at it again, and then he's cutting it and eating. He's like, oh, restaurant quality. And then he's going back, and I'm done, by the time he's. So I'm working on the mind. So he's got that. He's got a great mindfulness eating practice and a huge walking practice. So I remind him, I was like, you've got your walking meditation. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I need that for me. I've got to go and get out and clear. So you're right. It doesn't matter how you label it. He doesn't matter. He can't picture himself doing yoga, like what everybody thinks yoga is, like the pretzel poses and
Yes.
all of that. He can't see himself doing that. So I remind him that I'm learning from him for my mindful eating. I want to join him for more mindful walking. And if it is something that we can do together, I respect those times he needs and wants to go by himself. But if it's something that I can be, okay, we like to walk, I can introduce, okay, let's look for the color blue today, for example, on our walk. Like, we don't have to always be talking. There's so many ways that you could be mindful. So my husband is a reminder of that. You've shown me a lot of ways, and I'm constantly looking for new ways to be mindful. Because isn't that what we learn, right? And that's why we call it yoga practice. We're constantly trying to live yoga off the mat.
Yeah.
So when I was on the telephone 7 hours this week with a tech support, and I had been guided in a yoga nidra practice before by one of our summit participants, thank goodness. And I'm in there, and I'm like, hour one, hour two, you think it's going to go. By hour four, I'm doing breathing exercises, because you're trapped, you're on your computer, you've got them on speakerphone, you can hardly go to the loo,
Yeah.
without getting disconnected. So I'm doing breathing exercises, I'm telling the people in the chat, I'm a yoga teacher. I'm trying to be patient. They're like, oh, you teach yoga? I'm like, yes, I'm being called. They're like, sorry for the inconvenience. You're like, yeah, fix my computer. And then you're like, breathe, remember to breathe, remember to breathe. So I'm always looking for ways to be mindful. And I don't think that there's the search will end. Let me put it like that. I don't imagine that I'm going to be that person at the top of the mountain, you know, in complete enlightenment or whatever. That's
Yeah, I totally understand. It just had a beautiful idea that I could try some martial arts. And the other day I was on the phone with the just with some like employee of this fighting school, and I just said that I would like to try it. I never did it before, but it looks fun. And then she asked me what I do, and I said, "Yes, I'm a yoga teacher." And she went like, "Oh, I did it twice, and it's not for me." So I told her, "Listen, after I went twice to a jiu-jitsu class, would you let me fight against, I don't know, Mike Tyson?" Like, no.
And you know what? That's interesting because if you had time or inclination or really wanted to, you could talk to her and find out, well, what kind of yoga class? Because we know there's all kinds of yoga classes, you know? And because if she went to a yoga nidra or something for the first time, some people just cannot lay still. You know, she could have found that horrible and maybe tried again. Because maybe, you know, sometimes you feel bad. How come everybody else can do it? And I can't do it if you're not prepared to know that this could be hard. It can be hard to sit still. And sometimes, depending on your yoga classes, a lot of stillness, right? In your mind, breathing, sitting, it can be hard for people to do that. So it's interesting to hear her say that. And even if that wasn't the case, it's not going to be. Is anything for everybody, right? And maybe that just wasn't her thing. But it's isn't that fun? How did that, now, to me, there's a yoga lesson in that. Help me figure out what it is. Because you couldn't take it personally, because listen to you take it, I'm thinking, oh, why did you know, why did she have to attack yoga or say that or you know, but it depends on how she said it and how did you receive it.
Yes, and I think it's just like what you said. We don't need to call it yoga if someone has some kind of stress regulating mindful practice. This is absolutely perfect, and we don't need to call it in any way. We just need to respect whatever we do, right?
That's right. Because I think the reason I say that, because I think my husband has a what's the term? Just the term yoga. He's thinking, not for me. You know what I mean? So then when I pointed out, I was like, oh, well, you know what I did with him? What's that test that we can take? Oh, yeah, to know if you have too much, if I'm too hot, pitta, or if I, you know, so you know your balance. You know that how you can take a quiz?
Yes, like the dosha
Thank you.
quiz. Yes.
Thank you. I took the dasha quiz with him, and he was, that's why I'm like, you're so balanced. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so balanced. I'm like, I am, you know. So here I'm the one on the mat all the time, but he's balanced. But when I met him 20 years ago, he had a strong running practice, strong walking practice, and 20 years later, it's become the running is pretty much gone, but the walking is still there and the cycling. He's always had a strong cycling, walking, and running practice. Over time, the running's petered out and the walking has even increased. So, you know, that was just interesting to me that his doshas are so balanced and I'm more pitta. So it's a constant practice.
Yes, I'm like naturally I'm a Vata type, but I really need to be careful with not going too much into the Pitta. Because I just know what you said, like you can't sitting still and everywhere like is something interesting, like always on the go, like my Vata mind is like, oh, a butterfly. And I'm distracted, and then I don't want to be a workaholic, which would be more like the Pitta. And yes, it's everything is just balance. And going for a walk or just doing some kind of sport is getting in like a little bit more of balance, or yoga nidra for some kapha in there, and it's
Oh,
balancing.
and you know what, Stephanie, I want to talk to you about the balance. Like, how did you find, because I found when I was writing the book, you've got deadlines, self-imposed or whatever, or real. And I wasn't practicing as much yoga when I was writing about mindfulness. Was that's a weird thing because I was so time crunched. I put myself on such a time crunch because of my mother, and I could see her health declining that I put myself. So I'm writing about wellness and mindfulness and stuff, and I wasn't necessarily doing the practices during that time. But what I never let slip was my gratitude journaling practice. That's over 2,000 days old. So that, if nothing else, and I say that just to say, some days get so busy or some weeks and you're like, I didn't do anything. Gratitude, in my experience, is something that I can always find time to do. And when I don't, I miss it. So if I go to bed that night and I'm like, oh my God, I wake up, I didn't do my grat. I immediately go and backdate it for the day before. And then I'm like, okay, at least before I go to sleep. That has been so, it doesn't stop bad things happening for you. A mindfulness practice isn't going to stop bad things from happening. Yoga's not going to stop bad things, but it definitely helps you deal with them. And that gratitude practice, it's really, and I got it from Oprah Winfrey. I think you know Oprah Winfrey in Germany.
Of
Yeah.
course we do.
Okay. And I remember she used to talk about it years ago on her show, gratitude practice, gratitude will change your life. And if you just, it sounded so corny and simple, and you're thinking, no, but it really does. And like I say, it doesn't stop bad things from happening, but it does change your
Yeah.
perspective. And when they do, it helps you remember that all is not lost. This bad or disappointing or sad thing happened, but you've got all these other wonderful things going on. And it's so easy to lose sight of that when you're in grief, at least for me, when you're in grief, which is why it's so important. I say, at least if I do it, like right now, I'm crying every day. Walk going around my parents' house every day, calling out for my parents, wishing they could be here, looking at their things, not sleeping well, working and trying to do a lot of things. But I drop the ball. You can drop the ball. You miss appointments, you forget about things, something can interrupt you and you get off your track. You get happened to me today and you know it, So I say that to say the gratitude has been the one thing that I've been grounded to. So even when everything else, and I'm not going to cry, I may cry, but even when everything else isn't working, and I guess if there's a tip or something I would give people is to hold on to gratitude. I think it's pretty much the only thing that you can really hold on to, because everything else can be taken away from you, like physical
Yeah.
things and people, situations, right? Jobs, homes. You can lose just about anything that you've been given or just about anything that you have, except for gratitude. At least that's what I've found. I've been through some tough times. I've been raped. I've been divorced. I've moved a lot because of military. I've had to give up jobs. You may not know. I've survived the AIDS pandemic and lost a lot of gay friends to it and related illnesses like hepatitis. But the gratitude is always there. So that's my tip. If you can, and it's good to, I'm always good about saying it. This isn't my gratitude journal, but this is one of my journals. But if you can actually write it down, because the science has proven there's a connection in your neurons between you holding a writing instrument, formulating your thoughts, holding an instrument, writing it down, reading it, and saying out loud. I can't explain the neuroscience behind it, but I've listened to neuroscientists explain it. So that's even something good for shifting your mindset. So I use an app, which is the same thing with holding it down. So I'm starting to also write it down. So I've got like triple enforcement in my app that I always have with me on the go. It's backed up in Google Drive, phone to phone, I can change it. When the data uploads. But then, sometimes you don't always have room to carry around a journal. And I tend to misplace or lose things. So I'm so glad to have it in digital form because I've got the backup, because I've lost phones before, but I've got all the data, in the
Yeah.
cloud that I can back up. So thank you for letting me have that little bit, but that just kind of came to me to, like, if I was going to share anything on your podcast, it doesn't matter about accomplishments or kudos. I mean, I accept them greatly and I'm proud of them. Don't get me wrong. But without the gratitude practice, none of that matters. I guess that's the best way I can sum it up. Without the gratitude practice, none of it matters. It doesn't matter if you have a lot of money or a little money. If you don't have gratitude, you don't really have anything. I've learned that. Not that I've ever been super rich. Thank goodness I've never been food or housing insecure. Some years I've made more money than others. That's for sure. I've had more disposable income. But the gratitude, and I work with people. Stephanie, I don't know if you've had this experience. I had a job with a, I was a, we were working from home. This is probably before work from home was really popular. He had this fantastic, beautiful house in the suburbs. And he had this beautiful, I don't know if he built an extension, but a home office. And he was a sales regional sales manager for one of the three network radios. What do we have? ABC, CBS, NBC. So he was, I think it was an East Coast, I don't know. He had a sales job for a network and he made a lot of money. Beautiful home, designer cars. Very unhappy person though, was divorced, had his daughters. Sometimes they had to come down from out of state. He was very upset because he sold his American Online AOL stocks like a day before his neighbor made a $2 million off of his AOL stocks. Like something with the stock market, he stopped. He sold. Don't you know this man was miserable, had a heart attack over his desk trying to get the $2 million back that he never ha had in the first place, but that could have had and had all these things and was the most miserable person I ever work with. So I just throw him up as an example because I loved his daughters. He was so nice to me. He was just bitter. And I didn't know then, this was decades ago, I didn't know then to tell him about gratitude. I didn't know anything about mindfulness then. This is way before I had a mindfulness practice. Let's see, I had yoga. I had yoga, but I didn't have a mindfulness practice. It's not the same thing, if you know what I mean. Yoga was more exercise for me then.
Yes.
Because I came to yoga because of a bad back. So that it was exercise. It was like the chiropractor was like, yoga's going to help you. So I went to it for physical and not, even though the first class I went to, at the end, she did about a night, 20-minute yoga nidra. And I was so receptive. I was gone. I was like up, out of body experience. Loving it. Did not want to come back into the room, back into my body. But still didn't connect it as like a spiritual. I just was like, wow, that was great. I love this yoga teacher. And I loved her. I was like, I'm just going to keep coming back because my back. And then every class going off into yoga nidra, but still not connecting it and trying to find, you know what I mean? And it wasn't until decades later when I went into yoga teacher training, I was like, that's yoga nidra. Actually, I'm sorry. That's not true. It was when my dad died. And I threw myself into yoga, online yoga with Veterans Yoga Project. I was just signing up for every yoga class I could take. So in the evening, like at 9, there was this yoga nidra class. And I was like, okay, great, I'll take it. Do a. And then get there, sitting on the mat, it's online, waiting for it to be a physical class and find out it's a med. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I get there, I was like, that's what this is. It's called yoga nidra. Because I'm always out in like the 10 minutes. I have to be careful. I have led yoga nidra before and have almost fallen asleep. Has that happened to you? I have fallen. I have been, and I'm like, oh, okay. Wait a minute. I was going to fall asleep. So something is very, I'm very receptive to yoga nidra.
Yes, I'm just thinking how long I am practicing now yoga nidra. I think it's about 4 years now. I teach it now for about 2 years, I would say. And like for these 2 years, it's almost every day that I practice it.
tell you.
It's wonderful. Of course, the first times I fell asleep,
And you know
but
what? Don't
now
feel
not
bad
anymore.
about that. Because, yeah, don't feel bad about that, because I've had teachers tell me, because I felt bad too. And they were like, you know what? That's your body. You've put yourself, your body and your mind, in the perfect opportunity to get rest. And if your
Yeah.
body takes sleep, it's what it needed. Right? So.
Absolutely. And coming from a place of yeah, being traumatized, I was sexually abused, and I have endometriosis, and as a symptom of
Yeah.
all that, I have a CFS, so
I don't know what that is. What is
I'm
it?
chronically tired or
Oh,
exhausted, and
fatigue.
it's not really getting away. But I need to say now, with all the sport that I do, with the yoga practice, the mindful practices, it's like I have my life back. I can say that, and I'm so proud of it, and I'm so happy. And this leads back to the gratitude, really. I'm
Oh,
so
that makes me
grateful
so
for
happy. That makes me so happy because, and especially when you say, yeah, chronic fatigue syndrome and you're feeling tired, it seems counterintuitive to exercise. Well, then be
that.
active. You're thinking, I don't want to be, you know, I don't feel like it, but it's helped you. So can you
Yes,
say
yes,
you,
yes.
how much better do you feel? Like you say you have your life back. You're not exaggerating, huh?
Yes, so when I got diagnosed, it was just like, okay, now everything that I felt before has a name. Because I suffered from everything that I mentioned for over 10 years, and no one, no doctor ever took me seriously. So I'm now 28. So going back over 10 years, I was a teenager. So it started with, oh, teenagers are just weird. Like, they're just tired. All right. So this was the first
Yeah.
expression the doctor saw. Yeah, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, well, I went to more doctors and people started to take me more seriously. But it wasn't really like, we can't find anything. So, well, CFS. And then
Yeah.
it took some more years to get diagnosed with endometriosis and to work on the diagnosed PTSD.
Yeah.
And I mean, I took many opportunities for healing. I don't think that it's like, oh, now I'm healed. No, it's a journey. But I came a long way. I'm very grateful for it. And I would say, I mean, especially the CFS really got better. I would go up to 80% because there were days I was just laying in bed. I couldn't move. My whole body hurt. I was super tired. And now I'm waking up and I'm like maybe I go for a walk. Let's do a 30-minute workout. And after that, I feel mentally so much better that physically is like, yeah, okay, I can live with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's remarkable. And I'm so glad to hear that. Thanks for telling me, because I remember when I was, we didn't know what it was I had, and I, similar symptoms to you, couldn't get out of bed and in pain. And, you know, my husband would have to pull me up
Yeah.
and then go in to get, you know, tested. And they're like, oh, we can't find anything. I think they took 10 vials of blood. I had 10 vials of blood taken before they could figure it out. And I can remember one doctor saying, oh, you know, just go. You probably just need to go to the spa or to the gym or something, which isn't bad if he said go to the gym to exercise to feel better. But he was like, go to the spa and just, you know, like, oh,
My
nothing's
doctor
wrong.
told me, yeah, just start with yoga. I'm sorry, I'm a yoga teacher.
Yeah,
Already had an idea, sir.
you're like, we need to dig a little deeper. You're like, nothing wrong with that, but we need to dig a little deeper. So then finally finding out that I had rheumatoid arthritis, like you say, it's such a relief just to have a diagnosis, you know,
Yeah.
because I can remember I ended up changing doctors, had an in, I don't know, what do you call it in English, at least in the US, I think we would say a resident. So you finish medical school. And then, you know, like your first job, like, you know, you're, so she was like, okay, we're gonna figure this out. It was like a mystery to her. And I remember she called me and she's like, I found it. You've got rheumatoid arthritis. And we were like, yay. celebrating it, because once you know what you have, you can go. And now I can say, okay, I've got some residual damage, but I've got no occasional flare ups, but got out of that. But I don't know, and probably maybe with you, like with me, I found out, maybe like you got obsessed and did a bunch of research, like I did, that rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease. It affects women more than men. They don't necessarily know why, but we know that stress, chronic stress, can trigger autoimmune disorders. I don't want to say disease conditions or whatever, disorders. And that's what happened to me. Do you think stress is what could have triggered it for you?
Well, I would say the stress of being traumatized.
Right. But and like the trauma with it, that, but also, and see, here's the thing I say with the stress, because, like I said, I had that, I had this big traumatic incident in 1996. And then I want to say it wasn't until 2009 that the rheumatoid arthritis, the symptoms, or 2008, even before that, six, started slowly manifesting as physical pain. I can remember I lived in Belgium and I was getting, what was it? Like, infrared or some type of treatment, because I was starting to get like in pain. They couldn't really figure it out. That was probably 2006 or something, 2004, 2005. I can remember about 2006. That's when I couldn't get out of the bed. So when I say stress, because this is what I still really haven't figured out. We have this traumatic experience that was like a long time ago. And then, you're going on with life, trying to deal with it. And then, boom, decades later, this happened to me. Like, so I'm wondering, I think it was it a accumulation of all the stress. Like, you've got this one horrible thing, and then all the other stress. And then maybe, because I wasn't dealing with it really, I couldn't even talk. Because what happened to me, I got dropped out. I was going to jump out. It was too high. I didn't know. But I got dropped out of a four-story window outside of Paris because I didn't want to get raped. And I had been raped two times in my life before. So you're thinking about all that trauma, but then the big trauma of like, boom, coming out the window, the physical trauma, the back. Never, couldn't even talk to anybody about that, right? Never told anybody, what happened for years. And then having this autoimmune. So when I say, is it stress? Yeah, it's stress and trauma. But I just wonder, is it kind of like one thing happens and that's it? Everything comes up and then your body shut down. I think that's what happened with me.
Well, I have a theory. Like, I absolutely think that what I would call the everyday stress, is absolutely bad for us, and we need to reduce that. But I think even more when you had, let's say, just a very stressful situation, because not everything is drama or a big T drama, but let's say a very, very stressful situation or time, especially when it's over a period of time. Then what I think, and I mean, I'm here in Germany, the therapies focus mainly on the mind, the typical psychotherapy, and maybe the body. Now somatic movement healing is coming up. But I think what in our modern Western therapeutic practices, what we leave out is really the emotions and the spirit. And I think that these stressful experiences, they are, yes, they're stored in the body. We try to understand them with the mind. But there's so much more to it. And as we leave out these two parts, I really think there's always something left, like something missing, to our healing journey. So that's my theory. And I had a really nice talk with Enerea Salazar, who's a massage therapist and, yes, a Native American. from Texas, and she's a Mexican woman, so her traditions is why it's called Houston Aztec Massage, her business. But like from this part of the world, because we know, right, the borders crossed the land, not the other way around.
Exactly. Yeah.
From this part of the world, so she like reminded me of these teachings that were also part, like with other names, of course, other backgrounds, but here in Europe and in Germany. So this really was eye-opening for me, and I was like, yeah, I think there's just something missing, like here in the therapeutic medicinal world. So this is my theory.
Well, no, it's a good theory. And I just asked because, you know, I had a spiritual practice, always believed in prayer, but raised like that, but had the shame that came along with, you know, the situation and not talking about it. But that's why my yoga's for grief, my yoga's for release the shame and anger, sexual assault, and for women over 50, because I'm like, well, I'm over 50. I'm not going to say how much over 50, but I try to have my yoga that I do one-on-one with people, authentic through my experiences, as far as like, okay, I know what it's like to be a woman 50 or 50 plus, had menopause, maybe had some autoimmune thing, maybe been divorced, you know, sandwiched, do you have kids, grandkids, your parents, you know, just like, you know, you have, you're meeting people where they are in their careers and helping, you know, I try to meet people where they are from where I am. Not that that's necessarily a requirement, because the my first yoga teacher, who I loved, I have no idea. I do know I went to every one of her classes. I know I went to a retreat. I loved this woman. I feel so lucky that my first yoga teacher, or experience, connected with me. That's why that story of the woman, when you said with the martial arts, she's like, she tried it twice and it didn't. It makes, you know, that triggered me in some type of way, as if I have to defend yoga, like if like yoga was my baby or something. But just because I feel so fortunate that my first experience was so wonderful. So I never know when I'm teaching a group class online for Veterans Yoga Project or another organization who is first time. I can sometimes see in the registration list, then you don't really know who showed in, depending on how big the class is. So try to make it very accessible and accommodating, and of course trauma informed, so that everybody gets something. And then encourage people, you know, if I'm going too slow, you know, if you've got a stronger practice, like when we're doing sun salves, you know, go at your pace, meet us here, this is what we're going to be doing. Because I want that, if I ever, you know, you want that first experience just to be, at least I want that first experience to be as wonderful as mine was. Because I came to yoga in need and trauma, right? In physical and mental, wasn't necessarily aware of the mental trauma, I guess. I guess you are, so some level, but physical. So I came with a specific need. I don't know why, you know, some people wander in because they think, I don't know, I'm gonna, or they come with a friend. But I came with a specific need and left with a practice. I mean, you know, I left with something big, much, much more. It lasted past the healing for my back, let me put it like that. So that's what I want to make sure that I offer people, because who knows why they come? They have something that they get more, that once that one problem's solved, they want to keep their practice, because they can see the what the residual benefits for those are huge.
Yes, absolutely. So let's speak about teaching yoga and more from a business perspective. How was your way to become an award-winning blogger and yoga teacher? I'm super curious if this went hand in hand or were these two separate things in your life?
Well, one happened before the other, and that was the blogging. So I did have the, say I discovered yoga in 1996. In 2000, 22, no, yeah, 20, two, no, sorry, 2002, because it was after 9/11, 2002, I moved to Europe. But then in that was Belgium. Then in 2005, or six, I think it was six, I moved to Sweden. Now that's even further north and further far away from my hometown of Washington, D.C. Fewer people who look like me, African American people, maybe fewer Americans that I was meeting originally. In Belgium, I was working for the American Chamber of Commerce, right? Had tons of American friends, went to university there. Boston University had a campus there. I was completely entrenched in an American environment if I wanted to be. Moved to Sweden because of my Swede, and we're in a small West Coast town. I do meet some Americans. He helps me. He's like, I know an American. She's married to, a colleague, African American like you from New York. Great. You start meeting people. You start meeting people. What was I talking about? Oh,
Once
the
you're on your
blogging.
way from
That's
the
right,
blogging, the yoga.
the blogging. Because I'll say, where is that going? Because I do everything for selfish reasons. So I felt lonely or just needed to meet more Black women or American women or women doing things, English speaking women, right? I'm coming to Sweden with no Swedish. So English speaking women, just women, like-minded women, women. Because breaking into Scandinavia, once you break in or you meet people, my husband's friends were my friends from the beginning. They were like, but making friends on your own as an adult can be challenging anyway. So I said, let me build.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I was like, let me build this online community through blogging was kind of new then, I guess. Or again, like I say, this is 2005, I don't know. So I said, let me figure out where I am, just doing research, finding out what these women are doing. Oh, there's a newscaster that looks like me. Oh, she's on the national football team. Oh, just to see what's going on. Where can I get my hair done? People, then like a network and people moving. I'm in Germany. Where can I get hair? The special shampoo I need for my hair, or where can I get my hair braided? And so it just grew out of a community like that. And
Did you already have chicken soup? Okay.
my sister just came to see if I had chicken soup. Bless her heart. I did. And that became the blog became so popular, I guess, that I had to do a social network. And then after the social network, then I did a power list. But as it got popular, I was winning the awards for the blogging because actually back then there were no online spaces for Black women in community like what's happening now. Like, gosh, you probably weren't even born, Stephanie, but Ning used to be a social network platform that it had a free pay model, or you could pay to have it branded. And we left Ning when Facebook became popular because then it was like, okay, we move our group to Facebook. But this predated Facebook, and you could put different plugins and have like chat or have like a blog or have different groups. So it predated Facebook. That's how old we were. So then that came around, and that was like kind of killed off Ning. And so then on Facebook. So then it was like, okay, I had to get on LinkedIn because some people wanted a professional group. And then I had to break it up and have another group for people who weren't in Europe but wanted to move to Europe. So all of that came way before the yoga. And the yoga came, well, I shouldn't say that. I was practicing yoga before I was blogging. But my yoga practice kind of, once it did the job and my back was okay, I would only pull it out when my back hurt, and then it was like, okay, I'm down, and I knew exactly, what to do. But I wasn't doing the meditation. I wasn't doing the yoga nidra. I was using it just for instant pain relief because I knew, and I had figured out, because I used to have the worst painful periods. I had figured out somehow, somebody had given me a book, or I had figured out yoga for painful periods. There are some poses that you can do that would be instant pain relief. It used to be I'd have to submerge myself in a hot tub, like a hot bath, bubble bath, or do these yoga. It was horrible. So I would only pull it out. So I wasn't doing that. I wasn't living yoga. I wasn't breathing. I wasn't meditating. I wasn't doing anything mindfully. So it wasn't until Daddy brought me back into it. His death brought me back into it, where my yoga practice became more than yoga just being something to help my back. Because that's, as I said, I was sent to the yoga by the chiropractor to help my back. I was fortunate enough that I had a wonderful teacher, and she introduced me to Yoga Nidra. I didn't know. I just knew it came at the end of the class, and I took as many classes with her as I could. I don't know if I moved or she moved, but I lost her in kind of my yoga practice. So as I said, always knew the twists. Then when I got into the yoga teacher training, I started offering free yoga to my community, my online yoga community. And actually, the first class I taught was International Women's Day 2023. And it was a free yoga class online. I rented a room at my public library because I didn't know. Yeah, and I just had my laptop. I didn't have any equipment or any setup, to do it at home or whatever. And they had a good light and I had this space. And I remember I'm screaming because I didn't have the earphones connected in there. So, but it happened, and I had women to show up for me. So I could only hope that I can be as a good as yoga teacher as I was a blogger, because I think I was a pretty good blogger. Or I don't know if I was good, but timing is everything. I don't want to say I was cutting edge. I was
We're
the first one
good.
out
You
there.
are good.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. But you know, I was the first one out there. Just like, okay, and her name is Adrian. We spell it differently, but everybody talks about it, and I need to watch. But is there somebody named Adrian that does yoga videos that I think owns that space? Like, I've heard about it. Like, she owns that space during the pandemic. Like, right? Everybody. So I kind of own that space for a while, and I'm so proud to see other women that have come, and a lot of them I know that are doing things. And now I want to do the same thing with yoga. If I can help people that have had the grief or the trauma with sexual assault, or have had to deal with menopause, becoming an adult orphan, some people are raising their grandkids, divorce. I've been through all of that. So I wish I had a stronger yoga practice for longer. But it's not about regrets, right? But that's one of the things I can say for advice. When I meet some young women that are like in their 20s doing yoga, I just am thrilled for them and say, don't drop it. Because I was in my 30s when I hurt my back, but I didn't keep it up consistently. So don't let life, and it's the same thing, Stephanie. I see you with your food. You're careful with your food. It's the same thing with my food. When I was first trying to get rid of my rheumatoid arthritis, I was juicing, smoothies, almost vegan. Things got better. I kind of slacked and started eating whatever I wanted. I still think I eat way more vegetables and all that, still have that habit. But the daily juicing, me and my husband used to be, daily.
It's super
Now it's like
loud. I have
weekly.
one machine too, and it's just like it's too
Right.
loud. I can't stand it in the morning.
It can be a bit much. Maybe that's our problem, we don't do it. But what I did start doing is batch juicing, freezing them in the plastic bags, getting it in right away. And then if you can take that out in the morning, it'll be fresh. But it's nothing like fresh right out the.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but it sounds like a full circle that we did. We started with the Women's Day and now we're kind of ending with the Women's Day. So please let me ask my seven Q's, the seven
Oh, yeah.
questions that I really want to ask everyone here on the You Can Bloom podcast. And as we're already talking about beverages, how do you like your coffee?
Okay, you said we're talking about marriages. How do I like my
Be
coffee?
beverages, but marriage is
Beverages.
also a great
Okay.
topic.
Okay, because I think I mentioned I was divorced and I was like, marriages, how do you like your coffee? Okay. I right now am drinking hibiscus. For heart health, and it's pink and it's February. But say the question again, Stephanie, because I'm still thinking of marriages. So say it again.
So yeah, maybe I should just ask the question, like, imagine you are married. How would you, your husband, to prepare your coffee?
Okay, good one. He knows I'm straight up green tea, straight, no sugar, no honey. If we have fresh lemon, I would love a lemon slice in it, but I live and die on green tea. He knows, don't bring me green tea.
Perfect. All right. And what is your favorite food?
That's hard. Oh, Stephanie, that is a hard one. Oh, I don't know if I have a favorite food, but I like any food that reminds me of home. And by that, I mean home cooking, like either my mother, my aunt, or my grandmother, one of the women that prepared meals for love with me. So not necessarily a favorite food, but a feeling associated with food, and it's love and home cooking, if that makes sense.
I love that answer. I think it's the best answer I've heard so far to this question.
Oh, good.
So the next one isn't really a question, but could you describe yourself with three words?
That I think I can do. Loyal, loving. Relentless.
Yes, I love that. And this is just how you are.
Thanks.
So, what or who inspires you?
Well, if you come to the summit between 5 and 8 March, you will meet three women who inspire me.
Thank you.
And that is true. So that's as hard as the food question. Because I don't have a one answer for that. So I'm going to give them a three-part answer. Stephanie, Tess, and Candy are three women who inspire me, and you can meet them at the summit. And I mean that, which is why I asked them to be on the summit with me. So.
Thank you so much. And just a friendly reminder to our listeners, the link is in the show notes, of course. So let's go with the questions. Which person from the past would you like to meet?
Oh, yeah. Another hard one, but I think I don't know if you would have heard of Zora Neale Hurston. It's no reason why you would have heard of her, but maybe because you're a cultural anthropologist. She was a sociologist who lived during the Harlem Renaissance. She wrote Their Eyes Were Watching God, which is a novel, but she also did work where she interviewed freed slaves in Florida, where she was from, in one of these communities that freed slaves built or escaped slaves built during the time when they were enslaved. So they are some all conclaves that are unique in that they have more culture closer to African than American, because they either escaped or preserved it out of the I don't know how. I don't know how, because I think they were escapes, but somehow they didn't necessarily become completely Americanized in that way. So they have more tradition with the food. So Zora Neale Hurston was this brilliant woman who not only a novelist, but studied this. I would love to meet her. I would love to meet her.
Yes, I would like to be invited to that meeting too,
I was going to
please.
say you would love that conversation. Yeah, you'd have to be in on that. Yeah.
Absolutely. The next question is, what are you most passionate about right now?
Oh, yeah. This is going to sound silly, but getting my mother's taxes prepared. Is that a passion project? But it is, when you lose someone, their life continues as far as paperwork.
Yeah.
So I'm passionate about making sure I get my mom's paperwork in order to honor her. But it's coming into tax season here, so I'm passionate about that. Sounds weird saying it, but
Well,
it's it doesn't. Okay, good.
no, I think this sounds perfect, and it's just showing how much love there is, and I love that.
Appreciate it because it made me giggle instead of cry, because who wants to be like all over your taxes? But I do, and it's a way to honor her. So yeah, I'm passionate
Of
about that.
course. So the last question, what would you like other people to know about you or your business?
What do I want other people to know about me or my business? Well, my business, it is a business, but it's not the type of business that I started because I want to earn a lot of money. And I say that because in the tax world, right? It's a hobby if you're not earning any money, right? And it's a business if you're earning any, if you're earning money. So I want you to know about my business. I'm gonna earn money. You're gonna pay me, but you're gonna, it's, I'm not charging you because I want to make a lot of money. I'm charging you because you have to be invested into your outcome for the transformation that you're gonna get. Because you're coming to me because, like I say, you know, you've been raped or sexually traumatized. You're over 50 and dealing with those changes, right? Or you're grieving. So you're coming because you're not want to pick something up, put it on, and walk away, and you feel good. You need a transformation. So you have to pay for that. So that's why I charge you. So my business, if I can do it for free, right? If we could live in a society where we could survive, like we could do it for free, I would love to because I want everybody that needs it to have it. So know that about my business. I have to charge you, but don't let the fact that you have to pay keep you from getting help because we can figure that out.
Yes, I oh my God, I love that so much.
I hope that
This
made
is
sense.
perfect.
I hope
Yes.
that made sense because it is a business, right? You want people to take you seriously, but it's not like I'm not like trying to make a lot of profit. I have to make a living,
Yes.
right? So I don't ever want people to feel like, why am I paying for this? I can watch some video on YouTube. You can. And I hope you are when we're not together, if you are working with me or whatever. But you know what, Stephanie, have you had that? I don't want to say issue or question because we are offering something that people can find for free on YouTube, right? So they think,
Yeah.
right? So they think. Right, but we know when we work with individuals, we're curating what we're doing with them, for them. We can, you know, we have consensus on the goal. You know, like I say, it's not like you're just picking it off the shelf. It's curated, customized for you. It's like a handmade suit or something, right? That's made just for you. So that's why I say when people see the videos on YouTube, they're great. We've got videos on YouTube, you and I. Right, of doing things. So that's why I say, you know, when people want to know about my business, like, well, why are you charging what you charge? Because I don't think I'm cheap. I know I'm not the most expensive, but I don't think I'm cheap. But after the 12 weeks, something's gonna have moved for you. You're gonna have some change. You know, I'm not like guaranteed, you know, but something will have moved for you. Will you be where you want to be? It's gonna depend on where you started, how you're doing the work, and what happens in between the time that we're together. But I'm so glad you asked me this question because I still feel uncomfortable charging people. Till I get to the point where I realize it's a business, right? I have to charge people. If you don't charge people, they don't even take you seriously. And it's like I say, it's a hobby then. It's not a business. So thank you for letting me talk about that. And because I've had people say you're too expensive, and I'm like, I may not be the one for you, and I get it. You know, but I don't want them to feel bad or me to feel bad. And I'm not gonna say, okay, well, I'll charge you less because you think I'm too expensive. But that's why I say if you really need the help, we can talk about it because everybody is different, and it doesn't maybe need to be a 12-week thing for you. You know, because that's why we could talk and say, well, maybe you need this to get going. You know, let's get some things to get going and see what you do. But you know, you have a product, you have a plan, you have a passion, and you're like, okay, I know I need at least 12 weeks with people. Like, how long, if you're taking a coaching client, how long do you say? Like, you can't say you can come to two sessions and we're done.
Yes, that's true. And as I work a lot with a cycle-oriented approach, so I say at least 4 weeks that we really spend the whole cycle together in the business mentoring. And even my yoga courses are at least 4 weeks, usually 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know. I found with me with the grief, and it's been tested with other clients in 12 weeks. So, I'm glad to hear you say 8 to 10, because that's something to think about. But and I'm gonna find out from experience. But I know with the grief, 12 weeks after 12 weeks, it's you've shifted. You've shifted, and because at least with the. Well, you know this, with the grief, you can just be so paralyzed that you can't do anything. If you get
Yeah.
somebody to show up for 12 weeks, they're already like, you've changed my, that's already like, so that's
Yes.
what I mean. If you can pull together, if you can string together 12 weeks of one-to-one and we're focusing on your grief and working, at the end of it, I don't probably need to see you again, right? Like you say, you want your clients to be able to go.
Sounds hard, but this should be the goal.
I know. It does. It sounds hard, but it's like, I don't want to see you again after this. No, but it's hopefully they've got enough and they can come back to you if they want to, or a refresh or whatever, and you don't have to lose contact. But while people can have a lifetime yoga practice and you can go to practice every week, if you're doing one of our courses, right? If you're doing yoga for grief or, shame and anger, you're not, this isn't every week. You're going to be doing yoga every week, but we're not going to be doing our, you see what I mean? Our, well, the work that we're doing together. So then you can do a 12 week and then come back and it's like, Adrian, I want to do one-on-one yoga with you every week or whatever. It's like, cool. But it's not the same work that we would have been doing those 12 weeks together. So I guess my business is customized, made especially for you, not one size fits all. And don't ever let price be a barrier to your wellness. I worry about that, Stephanie. I know we have to go, but I know in Germany, people don't have to worry about the cost of their health care. Are people better off mentally, do you think? Or like, can I go in and say, I've got a mental health problem? And they'll say, okay, make mindfulness or take some yoga, or
Yeah.
is it a holistic look at your well health?
Well, I'm a business owner and I worry about my health care because I have to pay for it. You know what I mean? It's not that there's some other kind of entrepreneur that is paying at least a part for it. I have to pay it in full. And I'm in the public health care system still, and I don't think I want to leave. But this is
No.
a whole other topic. The thing is, it's not cheap. And I hear this a lot from other business owners that this is a huge question. And in my experiences, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs that are just starting off building their business. This is like causes headaches. Because this is
Yes.
really a huge topic. Of course, also including taxes and all that stuff. But yeah, healthcare isn't that cheap thing here in Germany as people might think. But I know from experience, especially experience yeah, from people coming from the Americas, that yes, it is cheaper here, it is easier here, but it's not that it's not a topic. Like, it's still a topic, and as the prices here are up as well, it's not getting any cheaper. It just got a letter saying that they will raise it for like, I think it was 30 euro per month, and I'm already over 250 euro per month.
Oh goodness. Okay, yeah. See, I'm speaking to you. Okay, so okay, Stephanie, good. So we can figure this out for each other, because I'm wondering what are my sister just brought my glasses. I didn't realize. Oh, because I went to get hot water. I don't know how I lost my glasses. But because like I say, we worry about our health care. I have 7 times where I'm either on the mat or leading the class during the week. How often are you doing that? And do you, like I say, I've almost fallen asleep during a yoga nidra. Are we getting the benefits ourselves when we're leading these classes? And are we making, so I've got to make time. If I'm on the mat 7 times, I still get on the mat and take other people's classes. Are you doing that for yourself? Because I'm wondering, is it worth being an entrepreneur, doing all this, helping others, when we're not feeding ourselves first? We're getting that.
Yes, I still have my own yoga practice, usually in the evening. It's the 10, 15 minutes right before I go to sleep. I take my ashwagandha. I make really like everything really, really, really cozy. I go to bed. I do hear my yoga session, my private yoga session. and then I fall asleep. So this is my own personal practice, and it's more kind of a stretching routine because I don't want to make it too physical. For example, on Thursdays, I teach two vinyasa yoga classes. It's 2 hour vinyasa yoga. This is a proper workout. So
Absolutely.
I don't want to have more of some physical exercises in the evening. I do some kind of stretching, and sometimes it's just 5 minutes breathing. And that's my yoga practice.
And that's fantastic, just then and that. I have to be better with my sleep hygiene. But, like I say, in grief, my sleep is messed up anyway.
Sure,
But
yeah.
that's good. Thank you for feeding me my soul today with that, because it's an uplift. These conversations among women and business women and yoga business women are amazing in
Yeah.
personal development and stuff. Thank you. Because I'm just going to get off and dive into other stuff. So to take this break and then be able to talk and think, that's like a little bit of,
Yeah.
it's like therapy. It's a little bit like a little bit of therapy for
It's
me,
better than therapy, to be
Yeah.
honest. And cheaper.
And cheaper, I agree. So thank you for making this space for me and including me. You're a big support to me since we've met, and I'm going through a
Always.
hard time right now. So thanks for inviting me to talk. I need
Yes,
that.
always. And yes, we will have more deep talk during the summit. So please, everyone seeing this, listening to it, show up. The link is in the bio or in the show notes, wherever you are. Getting to know about this summit, you will find it in my link boxes. And Adrienne, thank you again for your time, for being here, for sharing, for being that vulnerable, and for just being you. I love you. And it's
I
so
love
nice
you
to have you in
too.
my life.
Ich liebe dich.
Ich liebe dich auch. Have a nice day. Thank you so much.
To Stephanie, sweetheart, thank you. Stay well.